Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the 7th day of May. March. 2024. Like, what the hell? Anyway, welcome to it. Happy Thursday to you. Sorry, yesterday I got a bunch of emails. Hey, where's this podcast? I uploaded it. I had it all set to go. And while I was waiting for it to finalize whatever the hell it is that they do on their end at SoundCloud, I forgot to hit the save button. And I knew it. I was like, don't forget to hit the save button. And I forgot to hit the save button. So, sorry about that. So, that, I would say that won't happen again, but it happens a lot. So, it will definitely happen again. All right. Don't forget patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. I don't forget to hit publish there or save there. And the more of you who support the program through that website, through those websites, the less likely it'll be that I'll forget, honestly. But, you know, sorry. Anyway, you can enter the contest there. You get the weekend effort review. You get all sorts of bonus stuff. Check it out if you please, and please consider supporting the program. All right, let us get started with the program. Of course, there's a lot of things to get to. We've got to start off with the Super Tuesday results. And the Super Tuesday results were what you'd expect. Nikki Haley's gone. I didn't expect that. I thought she'd stick around at least another week just to sort of twist the knife, right? Just to kind of stick it to Donald Trump. I thought she'd stick around. She's done it this far, this long. What's the point of one more week? Well, there comes a certain point where you have diminishing returns. And you do have to go, all right, I'm not going to damage myself anymore, right? So good for her for figuring it out and doing it. She probably would have been better served to not do that, to not sit there and wait and go, wait a second. I'm trying to look this up here. But not try and damage herself any more than she already had, but she did. She did. Now, it's really up to Donald. There's no endorsement. And there's no endorsement coming in the near future. Which is fine, I suppose. Because, look, you sit there, and I know there are a lot of Trump supporters out there. Well, why isn't she endorsing Donald Trump? Why shouldn't she should endorse Donald Trump right now? What is she waiting for? Emotions are raw. These are human beings, so they're going to be raw. She's going to wait a while. But also, if it comes out today, the story is she drops out. It doesn't matter if she endorses. The story is she drops out. They also ran the subplot, the casual mention, the little throw-in is, oh, and she endorsed Donald Trump. But if you wait a couple of weeks, you wait a month, then you endorse your opponent, then that becomes the story. So the former governor today endorsed her former opponent, Donald Trump. See, it becomes a complete story unto itself. If she does it today, the story is not the endorsement. The story is that she's dropping out. I'm not saying she's given it that much thought. I think it's probably mostly that she just, you know, pissed off, honestly, mad, upset, whatever. Like, I'm not gonna endorse that guy, even though he didn't really run a negative campaign against her, all that negative of a campaign himself. Yes, his army of supporters did, but that was on social media, and if you can't ignore, you know, negative things said about you on social media, then I don't know what to tell you. But it's over for all intents and purposes next week, I think, with a couple of more victories. In formality primaries at this point, Donald Trump will secure the nomination. Joe Biden will. It's kind of funny watching the media try and spin what is going on. Republicans had a contested primary, right? They had an actual contested primary. There were two candidates left who are actively running against each other. One was both are well funded. They're not lacking in money. They're not lacking in ads, or they weren't anyway. So they had, there was a lot of opportunity for one to steal votes from the other. You know, spoiler was going to be Nikki Haley. She was never going to win, but Trump was the winner. Now, I want you to listen. I'm going to play this clip from Claire McCaskill, former senator from Missouri, who is an MSNBC contributor. They actually brought her up. They dusted her off and took her out of her mansion. She's one of the wealthiest members of the Senate when she was in the Senate. And then the people of Missouri recoiled in horror at the thought of her electing or her representing them any further. They threw her out after one term. And she has been, she portrayed herself as a moderate when she was in the Senate. She was anything but a moderate. And she also now is an MSNBC contributor. She recognizes that that's not the key to getting a new contract. So she has gone full-blown rabid leftist. There's no consequence for being wrong. There's no consequence on MSNBC for being an idiot, honestly. Actually, that holds true for all of cable news. But it is all of media, really. But there is no consequence for any of that except for you endear yourself to the audience. And if you endear yourself to the audience, you stand a better chance of getting another contract and a bigger contract. So when Claire McCaskill is talking about Donald Trump, it's the stupidity of the anger, the vitriol is turned up to 11. But what she says in this clip, is kind of funny because she then eventually gets around to talking about how it is that Donald Trump doesn't necessarily have the support of the Republican Party because there were two people running. There were two people to choose from. Whereas Joe Biden is getting overwhelming support, winning by more than 70 points in most of the primaries yesterday. Which, if you think about it, is a really weak, weird argument for somebody to make. Because what is it that Joe Biden's running against? He's running against a backbench member of Congress, Dean Phillips, I think his name is. Nobody ever heard of. He's got no money. He's got no funding. He's got nothing. Right? He was doing this to raise his profile. And amongst the progressive media, they've ignored him. MSNBC has ignored him. CNN has mostly ignored him. But if CNN paid full attention to him, it wouldn't matter. The 12 people who watch CNN probably wouldn't be voting in Democratic primaries. But it's a bizarre sort of argument to make. He's also running against Marianne Williamson, Oprah's guru. Probably has a pocket full of crystals. Not a lot of funding, not a lot of attention, again, paid to Marianne Williamson. I believe she's done more interviews on Fox News than she has on CNN and MSNBC combined, which there's probably not a whole lot of Democrat primary voters watching Fox News, just as though there are not many Trump supporters watching MSNBC. The party, the Democratic Party, has declared Joe Biden to be their nominee before any votes were cast. So again, that sort of cheapens any victory that he gets that isn't 100%. Like every victory Joe Biden should have, it should be 100%. Yet he's getting 20% in Wisconsin. 20% got undecided or undeclared, got 20% of the vote. Again, Democrats don't want Joe Biden, but Democrat voters are not really presented with anybody other than Joe Biden. So when you hear Claire McCaskill in this clip talk about how it is that Joe Biden is winning these primaries by so much compared to Donald Trump, who's not winning these primaries by as much, keep that in mind. For all the vitriol, there's certainly been a lot of anger directed toward Nikki Haley by Fox News personalities. She has been on. She's gotten press. She's been on just about every show you can think of. Now, a lot of those interviews are about when are you going to drop out, when are you going to drop out, but she's been on. The opponents of Joe Biden don't get any play like that. And the fact that Joe Biden isn't winning with 99% of the vote sort of undercuts what Claire McCaskill is trying to say. She's trying to say Republicans are in disarray and Democrats are united. But Democrats are anything but united. Listen to her try to make the case.
Let's go back and think about what his rationale was in the first place. Has he ever had a rationale? His only rationale is he thought it would help his brand. He's a marketer. He's a liar and a marketer. Republicans who went to the White House when he was president would come back and I would go over and talk to them and go, well, how was it? And they're just like, he has no idea what is going on.
You mean Republican senators?
Yeah, Republican senators would go to the White House and they'd come back like they do a meeting on health care.
No.
You know, and they'd come back and they go, well, he has no idea what the law does. He has no idea what it is. So this is not somebody who cares about anything other than himself. And the sad thing is that grievance, he figured out marketing grievance was the most powerful thing he could market in America, because there are a lot of Americans, and we need to realize this, who believe they've worked hard and played by the rules and somehow it hasn't worked out for them. They can't afford to retire. They can't afford to send their kids to college. And they were looking for someone who was going to tell them, you know, you've been screwed over. And by the way, you know, the irony is this is a guy with gold gilt toilets. But the, be that as it may, that's what's going on here. It's certainly what happened in my state. But I got to tell you, last night, I think was not a good night for Donald Trump. I know we spent a lot of time talking about how he won, but you know how many states that Donald Trump won by more than a 70-point margin? Two. You know how many states Joe Biden won by more than a 70-point margin? Every single one but two.
Right.
So the party is united on the Democratic side, and they got a big war going on in their party. I mean, I guarantee you Trump's going to win that war, but they still have a war.
You got to love it. You know how many he won by 70% or more? Two. Okay, seven. That's pretty big-ass margin, you ask me. All right, you're going to set the bar that high. How about the guy who has no opponent? Did he? Well, he won all but two. By 70%? He won all of them but two? He's running against nobody. He's shadow boxing and he gets knocked out in the third round. How is that good news? You can't polish a turd, but boy, howdy, you got to give Claire McCaskill the participation ribbon for trying, don't you? You maybe even offer to help pay with the cleaning bill, because it's really ground in there. They're going to have to probably run that through the machine 2-3 times. But it is amazing listening to this stuff. Oh, you know, the Democrats are united. Yeah, fully 20% of the voters in a bunch of states are going anybody else because Joe Biden doesn't hate Jews enough. And oh, by the way, the Biden administration is starting to hate Jews now. They're going, all right, we need a ceasefire. Kamala Harris went out there going, we need a ceasefire. It's horrible what Hamas did, but far too many Palestinians are suffering. Yeah, they elected these people, all right? At any point, if of course, the left is telling us the truth, which is always caps lock, big if, 48-point font, if they're telling us the truth, Hamas is a minority in Gaza. Just a tiny little fraction, but just a couple of troublemaking kids smoking by the dumpsters between classes. That's Hamas. Then the vast majority of residents of Gaza could at any point have easily overthrown Hamas, right? They could have, and they still could. They still could. If there were this mythical unicorn Sasquatch fraction of the people of Gaza, the Palestinian residents of Gaza, who seek desperately to rid themselves of Hamas after having elected Hamas. They wanted to do that. There are channels through which they could reach out to Israel. Israel would be a little bit skeptical, but they'd reach out to Israel and they go, wait a second, these people are serious. They really do want peace. They want a solution to this. They want to coexist, whatever. Let's work with them. Let's help them in whatever way they're comfortable with us helping, because we can't do it too much and we certainly don't want it widely known. But let's help them overthrow Hamas. And it would get done. It would get done. But you know what? That unicorn hasn't reached out yet. That unicorn isn't out there. And instead, you got the Democratic Party in this country going, we need, it's horrible. Yes, the real problem is the Jews. Those bullets fired by Hamas were perfectly intact until they hit the bodies of those damn Jews at that music concert. They're always screwing up our bullets. We need justice for our bullets. That sort of garbage. They hate Jews. They hate them. They don't know why. They've just been conditioned by it because leftists, they think, oh, if somebody's oppressed, it's problematic. Anybody, you know, people in prison are oppressed in this country, not, you know, triple murderers, not people who brought poison up from Mexico. No, 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 they're victims. They're horrible people and their oppression. Everything is seen through black and white, literally. And everything done by white people or whatever is bad. So they just want to disrupt. They're miserable people. They genuinely are miserable people who want to destroy the country. And this is who's running the Democratic Party. So Kamala Harris comes out and says, well, we need to get a ceasefire. Too many people are going without sandwiches in Gaza and blah, blah. No concern for why it is that maybe things are less than idyllic right now in Gaza. No concern for that. Too many. We got to do this. It's weird. I saw something the other day. Hamas can tell you within 30 seconds of an explosion exactly how many civilians were killed. And the media will dutifully repeat it, and the Democratic Party will take to the streets on it. But they do not talk about the 1,200 murdered by Hamas on October the 7th. They don't talk about the 130-plus people, including at least a dozen Americans, who are still being held hostage by Hamas. There's no calls for releasing the hostages from these protesters. Last night, Adam Schiff came in first out in California. Told you, I warned you about California. Don't get too excited about California. Adam Schiff won the California primary. A four-way race. He's going to face Steve Garvey, which is not surprising. But you had his acceptance speech. See, Adam Schiff is Jewish. He's not, you know, super pro-Israel. He's progressive. Progressives are progressives first. But his acceptance speech, or his victory speech, was repeatedly interrupted by leftists demanding ceasefire now, demanding ceasefire now. Well, here's a little bit of a clue for these people. Far be it from me, I don't ever want to stop left-on-left violence. But a member of Congress, which Adam Schiff is, or even a member of the United States Senate, has zero ability to stop anything going on overseas. Now, they can talk about it. They can complain about it. They can whine about it. They can call for it. They can give an impassioned speech about it. But they have zero ability to do anything whatsoever. They can't conduct foreign policy because they have no way to conduct it or to enforce it. But they don't care. These people are just angry at anybody who's Jewish or anybody who doesn't hate Jews or anybody who is in front of them in power. They are the ultimate drone army. They're told to go be angry at that person. They go, all right, let's go be angry at them. Let's do it. So you're telling me, Claire McCaskill, see, I didn't forget, telling me that it's Republicans who are in disarray because we had a contested primary, because it was an open primary. And yet it is Democrats who are united. Democrats are united. Well, who is Jason Palmer? If you're old enough to remember the late 80s, early 90s, who killed Laura Palmer? Well, that's now been replaced with who is Jason Palmer? Jason Palmer, rising political star. It should be a story. When Claire McCaskill's like, the Democrats are united. Donald Trump lost Vermont last night. I think it was Vermont. Yeah, it was Vermont. Doesn't matter. There was a big syrup accident on the freeway, whatever the reason was. Doesn't matter. Nikki Haley's out of the race, so there you go. But Joe Biden law, Nikki Haley was at least running. Spent money, spent time, burnt calories, made an effort to beat Donald Trump. She finally won a state. She won the District of Columbia, but nobody cared about that. It was the District of Columbia is the swamp. It's not the of all the races you don't want to win. Like District of Columbia is the one to do. But Joe Biden lost to a guy nobody not directly related to had heard of before last night. Nobody even knew he was running. Now, granted, it's in American Samoa, but still, it's a pretty big embarrassment, which is why it's not really getting a whole lot. It's getting some print coverage. It's getting mentioned, but it's not really like if he wins it, where's the Palmer momentum? Are the people going to try and unite? Are the anti-Israeli people going to try and unite behind Jason Palmer, get him more ballot access? No. ABC News report in a surprising yet politically inconsequential upset. Now, you got to love that, right? The first sentence. If Nikki Haley had dropped out, it would be Donald Trump lost a primary. He won 17 others, but he lost in Vermont. You mean the... Okay, there you go. I guess that's something. They send us Bernie Sanders, but whatever. In a surprising yet politically inconsequential upset on Super Tuesday, U.S. President Joe Biden lost the American Samoa Democratic caucuses to entrepreneur Jason Palmer. On Tuesday night, the local Democratic Party chair confirmed to ABC News that Palmer won, though the ballot total was tiny, with less than 100 votes between both candidates. With 99% of the expected vote, how long does it take to 99%? We're still holding that. There's less than 100 votes, so you could conceivably be waiting for less than one vote. With 99% of the expected vote reporting, Palmer leads with 56% of the vote, followed by Biden with 44%. The results mark Biden's first loss in the nominating process race so far. That doesn't meaningfully change his enormous lead overall, however, as he looks set for a general election rematch with former President Donald Trump. Now, this is a story about who is Jason Palmer. That's the title of it, but it's not much about the preamble. The first one, two, three, four paragraphs are all about how you don't have to care. Don't worry about Jason Palmer. We got him. We're propping up Bernie. Don't worry. Palmer told ABC News late Tuesday that he realized he had won American Samoa at precisely 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time while sitting in a hotel in Washington, D.C., when it became apparent to him that something must have happened as his cell phone started ringing off the hook with several media outlets and multiple staffers texting him directly. Palmer is currently in the U.S. Capitol to attend a Future of Education conference where he is slated to speak on Wednesday. He was surrounded by other conference goers when he declared victory. Now, how the hell do you even decide? You know what? Samoa's the way. Then I'm going to do this. In a chipper yet surprised mood, Palmer told ABC News, quote, "It feels great. This is the message that Joe Biden needs to hear, that the American people want to pass the torch to the next generation. And so I thank the people of American Samoa for stepping up to make that statement for the rest of America," end quote. Yeah, there's nobody's going to get that message. Wow, they use a picture. I don't know. They use a picture of him that if you'd ever taken a really bad like junior high school photograph where you're like, oh, that's not going to turn. As soon as they snap it, they go, all right, move along. You know, you're like, that's not going to look good. And he kind of asks for them to do another one, but they won't do it. That's the picture they use. Maybe he provided it. I don't know. But honestly, you got to do that. So eventually they get, why does my voice keep cracking? Eventually they get to the question. Literally, this is like 15 paragraphs of preamble down to where the whole point of the story. So who exactly is Jason Palmer? According to his candidate website, and he has a candidate website? I had no idea. Palmer boasts of previously serving in executive and leadership positions at multiple organizations, including Microsoft, Kaplan Education, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the impact investor firm New Market Venture Partners. He's a left-winger. Wealthy, progressive, because wealthy progressives never have to deal with the consequences of their actions. They never have to actually directly look in the face of the failures of their policies. Their staff weeds those people out, and they just bring in the people who benefit from them. It's weird. People who are only surrounded by people who support them. So Palmer has pointed to that experience in pitching himself as a problem solver in the presidential race, promising to create a new Department of Innovation and Technology, because that's what we need. Big government has failed us. We need bigger government. Quote, I kept waiting for someone with a business background to join the race. When they didn't, I decided to run based on my strong business background. He said last year, according to Mark. How is it, if this guy's been running last year and they're covering, how is it nobody's heard of this guy? I haven't even seen him as an also-ran on, like, any of the results. The business news outlet also reported that Palmer supports, quote, freedom of choice, speech, and religion. Wow, he's going on a limb there. What does that mean? Any restrictions on abortion? Like, because this week the left has been going crazy, going, oh, France is codified into their constitution, a constitutional right to an abortion. Oh, they lit up the Eiffel Tower. It says freedom to choose. And everybody's so super excited. They don't ever mention the fact that you have 14 weeks. They have a 14-week abortion ban in France. And it's been standard. It's been that way forever. 14 weeks. Okay, that's less than Republicans are proposing here, by the way. It's 16 weeks. Or 50, depending on where it is. 16 weeks, 15 weeks. And they go, yeah, France is so progressive. It's so wonderful. They have a constitutional right to an abortion. You have 14 weeks. For 14 weeks. Make up your mind. How much time do you need to make up your mind? They ignore that. But they just say, well, I believe in freedom of choice. All right, so let's decide what school to send our kids to. And we get a voucher, right? Because if we want to send them to private school or if we want to homeschool. Oh, no, no, you don't mean that kind of choice. Where exactly? How about on health care? We can pick a plan that suits our needs. We don't have to carry things like, I don't know, in vitro fertilization because we don't need it, or, you know, trans issues because we don't want it. No. You don't get not that kind of choice. You get when it comes to everything but abortion, Democrats offer you spandex. One size fits all. There you go. Spandex. Well, if you've ever been, well, I would say in a mall, but if you've ever been anywhere in this country ever, you know, sadly, that a lot of people do wear spandex who shouldn't, and one size might stretch over all, but it does not necessarily and definitely would not use the word fit. Fits all. So, freedom of choice, freedom of speech. Okay, I bet you dollars to donuts this guy is not a super fan of hate speech. Which, nobody's a super fan of hate speech. The problem with hate speech is when it comes to defining what hate speech is. It's you. It's you saying things you don't agree with. It's you saying, hey, wait a second. I don't think we should be cutting the genitals off of children. No. It's gender-affirming care. There's no such thing as gender-affirming care. If you just go by what those words actually mean, means you treat gender dysphoria. Because your gender is your gender, right? You might delusionally believe you're something you are not, but to affirm your gender would be to counsel you past whatever it is that is causing you to have these weird feelings and delusions that are impossible. I would say not true, but not true is covered by saying impossible. But no, not that. And freedom of religion. Freedom of religion. Something tells me that Dan Palmer would make you bake a cake, right? Any kind of cake. Who do you think you are? You can't do that. You practice your religion on Sundays, churchy. That's it. The rest, you leave your religious beliefs at the door of your church. You don't. You get to espouse them. You can believe them, but you don't get to live them. And espousing them, not in the workplace, Not outside an abortion clinic. Not anywhere like that. Like, oh, okay. That's wonderful. I'm just guessing. Quote, Palmer brings 25 years of experience in small business and multi-partisan fluency to his political endeavors, his website states. That means nothing. Adding, quote, as an education technology entrepreneur, executive, and investor, he offers rare levels of expertise. In what? What are those? I'm a multi-partisan. I have multi-partisan fluency, and I bring, as an entrepreneur, an executive, I oversee a team of six cats. And so I have supervised and invested in their future. I have an entire pounce portfolio that I have been responsible for and will continue to make sure that that grows into the future so that when they retire, when they reach the age of 16, now we're going to have to raise the age of retirement to 17 soon because there are fewer cats paying into the pounce trust fund than there are receiving pounce, but that's beside the point. We will take care of all of these things. So stupid. Speaking with Politico earlier this year, Palmer also cited Biden and Trump's ages at 81 and 77 compared to his own age, which Politico reported was 52. For this ABC News, who is this person? All they did was a Google search. This guy talked to another outlet. Hey, this guy said this to somebody else. Hey, this guy did this to the other thing. Did you not do any reporting at all? This is aggregation. This isn't news gathering. Quote, it's super important that the next president of the United States be someone who really understands young people, Palmer said. Because everybody knows that young people talk about how super important stuff is. Super important. We don't need to understand young people. We need to avoid catastrophe at this point. I don't care how old somebody is. We need to stop making things worse. And then we'll worry about making things better after that. But a good start would be to stop making things worse. At this point, not going, it's super important that the president have a TikTok and be able to reach influencers and really address the trans community. Quote, we need to pass the torch to a new generation of Americans, he told Politico, quoting JFK without acknowledging it. Adding that he believes the country's laws should be updated more often than they are now. What do you mean, updated? Look, not allowing murder, not allowing child sex trafficking, not allowing... What needs to be updated? Where are they... Well, they always say, we need to update our drug laws. The prohibition is not working. Prohibition is not working. Great, you're legalizing weed everywhere. You're decriminalizing all the drugs everywhere. Oregon decriminalized everything. Go to town. Guess what? They became a junkie magnet for the West Coast. And now they're going, we need to recriminalize drugs. We can't have people just openly shooting up smack and stuff like that. It's not a good look. It's not the key to productivity. Yeah, anybody could have told you that. Anybody could have told you that. But you didn't care. When they can push off the consequences of their bad actions, of their bad policies on other people, they will. But when it's literally they're the, when dinner sucks and they're the only one in the kitchen, like, okay, we can't do that again. We won't put cinnamon on the pot roast this time. I say that as sadly somebody who tried that once. It was my girlfriend at the time loved it. I thought it was terrible. Terrible. It wasn't tons of cinnamon, but just not. It was unfortunate, would be the word. A Biden campaign spokesperson brushed off the loss of American Samoa, telling ABC News on Tuesday night that there are unique politics on the island. It's unique politics on the island. They're different. They're different. They're minority. They're brown people. What are you going to do? American Samoa is a U.S. territory, not a state, so it does not cast electoral votes for president. However, it does hold primary caucuses. In 2020, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg was the Democratic winner. In 2016, the last contested Republican caucus, Trump won. The Republican presidential caucus will be held on Friday. For a story about Jason Palmer, there sure as hell isn't a whole lot about Jason Palmer on there, but that's it. That's probably the last you'll hear of Jason Palmer and about Jason Palmer because his existence and this victory is inconvenient to Democrats, just like you won't hear about the 14-year-old girl allegedly raped by an illegal alien in Virginia. Inconvenient. You're going to stop hearing about Lake and Riley. I mean, Fox will still cover it, but Lake and Riley doesn't exist on MSNBC. It doesn't exist anywhere else. There's a push to try and get the president of the United States. No. Al Sharpton attended all three of George Floyd's funerals. But Lake and Riley, who never smoked crack, never held a gun on a pregnant woman, never did time, never had a long-storied career of criminality, Al Sharpton ain't going there. I mean, Al Sharpton would go. Let me just qualify that. Al Sharpton would go if somebody paid him to go. He would. But short of that, and it's highly unlikely anybody's going to pay him to go, he's not going to give a damn about Lake and Riley. They live in two separate worlds. Two separate worlds. Democrats desperately don't want you to know about the other one. Since we're talking about out-of-touch Democrats and how just far gone they are, I want to play you something from MSNBC last night. I don't know if this was their panel the whole time, all night. I can't imagine it is. I imagine they move people in and out. But it was all five women, or at least people who are biological women. Who knows how they identify? Most of them don't seem to identify as human, so wouldn't surprise me. But they had Ginger Goebbels, Jen Psaki, Joy Reid, the blonde-haired black, the only cultural appropriating blonde hair, Joy Reid, Nicole Wallace, Rachel Maddow. I almost thought it was Chris Hayes, but still would have held that it was all women. And Alex Wagner. All five of them up there. Now, women, if there's one thing I've learned from Democrats as a dirty, filthy man, particularly a horrible conservative man, women are better than us. Women are a lot better than us. I've heard them out. They convince it constantly. You go, girl. You go, girl. And let's celebrate women. Mika Brzezinski has a big thing. Let's celebrate women. Know your value. Let's do this. Let's do that. Get more work done in the plastic surgery part of the strip mall than anybody else, but know your value. Well, to Joe, it's apparently all aesthetics. Like, I don't know. But that's beside, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, everything else, she ain't bringing a lot to the table. So I guess his taste is different than most people. Whatever. Beside the point, it's rude to call her unattractive inside and out and a horrible person. So I won't say those words out loud. Wait, what did I just say? Anyway, men are terrible. They stink. Women are better than everybody else. And they also don't know what a woman is. Let's not forget that. Women, sisters, let's all band together. Boy, ladies, let's go. We are going to do this. And then, like, but what is a woman anyway? We're not really sure. Huh. It's kind of a weird thing. But anyway, they look at the world. They look at the state of the race. They were looking at the election returns. And they were looking at what people's concerns were. See, exit pollers ask everything. Why'd you vote? Who'd you vote for? What'd you do that for? Why do you do this, that, and the other thing? So on and so forth. It's common that anybody bothers to talk to these people outside the polling place is a testament to our narcissism as a species. But whatever. They found that in Virginia, the top concern amongst GOP voters in the primary there is the border, is illegal immigration. Now, you don't have to be a geography major. You don't have to be Magellan to recognize that Virginia is not on the border. If you had the understanding of current events and historical knowledge of, say, a third grader, you would point that out and say, well, why do they care? They don't care. It's like, say, there's a spate of, well, like, back when Democrats were beating the hell out of elderly Asian women, right? Remember that? Elderly Asian women just walking down the street, minding their own business, Oakland, San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles, anywhere. There just happens to be an elderly Asian woman walking down the street. Sometimes Asian men, but maybe they were confused. They're Democrats. They didn't know what they were beating up. But somebody would come along, Democrat, usually a Democrat of color. Actually, I don't remember any video that wasn't. And just punch him. Just punch him. Just, hey, can't help but notice you're carrying your groceries. How about a right hook? Boom. That'll help you. That sort of thing. And people were being seriously injured. You knock down an elderly person, just falls, and they can be hurt. You get them with an uppercut, and that's going to cause all, like, if you're conscious, you can at least hopefully try to brace yourself a little bit when impact and lower the impact. When you're unconscious, you're not going to be able to do that. So people were getting seriously hurt, hospitalized. I think a couple of people might have actually even been beaten to death. And so the argument there for these Democrats, if you say, well, if you don't live in a border state, what do you care about the border? Then would be if you live in Montana, where there's some Asian people, not a lot, some. You live in Idaho, again, some. Not a lot. There's some people of some everywhere. Alaska, not a lot. That you shouldn't care about this. And you go, well, there's a spate of videos of people being, of Asian people, having holy hell beaten out of them. And people in Alaska are concerned. Would you sit there and you go, what the hell do people in Alaska care? They're not Asian. That doesn't make any sense. You care about your fellow human beings if you're a decent human being. Which is why Democrats don't care. I don't care about the border. Doesn't directly impact me. I live in a gated community, or I live in a doorman building. I exit my building in my MSNBC provided town car with the windows blacked out from the basement. So I don't actually have to go out of the building and see these people, these illegal aliens all over the street. I don't have to deal with it. There's a Whole Foods in my building. And it's on the third floor. You can't get to it unless you live in the building. So I don't have to deal with anything. I have groceries delivered, whatever it is. They don't live the way that you and I live. So when you hear this gaggle of five personalities over at MSNBC joking about illegal immigration, why would anybody care about it? You sit there and you go, then why would anybody care? They don't want you. You're not an illegal alien. You don't live near the border. Well, then, by that logic, all those white liberals who got tattooed on them Black Lives Matter, isn't that more cultural appropriation than anything else? You're not black. Why should you care about that? You don't live on the border. Why should you care about the border? You're not Asian. Why do you care about Asian people getting beaten up? Well, Democrats don't care about any of this. They use it to divide. They use it to manipulate. They use it when they can use it, and they ignore it when it's inconvenient. And when it's really inconvenient, like now with the border, they then mock it. And that's what these people did last night. There's a very short clip, 14 seconds long, but it speaks volumes.
I mean, if you look at some of these exit polls, I mean, I live in Virginia. Immigration was the number one issue. Yes. I mean, again, these could change in Virginia.
Well, Virginia does have a border with West Virginia. Very, very contested area.
Thinking, build
a
wall. Like, what?
You can hear Joy Reid cackling. Yeah, what do you care about that for? What do you care about? She doesn't have a care in the world, Joy Reid. She doesn't give a damn. Well, just back on February 27th, this headline from Fox News. Venezuelan illegal immigrant charged with sexual assault against 14-year-old girl in Virginia. Why is it that the people of Virginia might be concerned about the issue? Why? Well, if you've been to certain areas of Arlington or Alexandria up in northern Virginia, just on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., you would have difficulty communicating with a lot of people you'd find on the streets. not people on the streets busily going about their day, hurrying from one place to another, but people milling about on the streets. A conversation struck up in the, say, Home Depot parking lot. You would have difficulty unless you spoke Spanish. If you go into certain neighborhoods where you think, well, that's a very rich area, it is a very rich area. The wealth is very concentrated in liberal areas, and then there's a lot of high-density housing, as they say. That is where the cartels stuff illegal aliens. See, you can't afford the 10 grand to be smuggled to the United States. We'll cover it. You owe us. You'll work for us when you get there. And they put you in, here's a place to sleep. The rest of the time you're going to be working. All right? You work off your debt to us. You can really never work off your debt to us. It's modern slavery because you incur more debt. You're going to have to pay rent on the place you're staying as you're working off your debt, and they're going to feed you, and they're going to do this, and you're going to have to pay for all of that, too, and so on and so forth. It is perpetual indentured servitude, which is slavery. But it's modern slavery, and it's progressive slavery, and they get to vote for Democrats if they get citizenship, so they have that going for them. So these people on MSNBC are not impacted by illegal immigration whatsoever. So they can joke about it because it not only they're not impacted by it, they as professional media people have to ignore its existence because its existence damages Joe Biden. It damages Democrats. They've created this problem. If you watch MSNBC, you could be forgiven for not knowing that there's anything going on at the southern border because they don't talk about it. So when you see this evil sewing circle going, ah, what are you going to do? You don't know about this story. New details have been released after Virginia authorities arrested a 32-year-old Venezuelan national illegally present in the U.S. for sexual assault of a minor. You probably also don't know about Lake and Riley. They had to mention her, but then they quickly moved on. The Campbell County Sheriff's Office said that Renzo Mendoza Montez was arrested on Thursday, February 22nd on two felony charges in connection to a sexual assault that took place in January. The victim was a 14-year-old female, officials said. Quote, due to the fact that this is an active investigation, the sheriff's office will not be releasing any additional details related to the case. We are especially sensitive to the fact that these crimes involve a young juvenile who lives here within our community, end quote, Sheriff Whit Clark said in a statement. Quote, like any criminal investigation conducted by the Campbell County Sheriff's Office, upholding the integrity of the case and priority, blah, 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 goes on from there. Mendoza was arrested on one felony charge of carnal knowledge of a child without force and one felony charge of taking indecent liberties with a child, the sheriff's office said. He is currently being held on those charges at the Blue Ridge Regional Jail. Officials say Mendoza is a Venezuelan citizen who is in the country illegally after being previously detained and released from U.S. Customs and Border Patrol in El Paso, Texas on September 2nd, 2023. Now, if you're playing the home game, September 2nd, 2023 is right smack dab in the middle of the Biden administration. Can't blame this on Donald Trump, so it doesn't exist. The ladies over at The View MSNBC, they got to work on that name, don't care. That's really what it was. That's what that show was. That's what their election night coverage was. It was The View. More diverse, but The View. And you sit there and you watch these people just laugh. Ah. They ignored Asian women being beaten to a bloody pulp. They ignore illegal alien crime. They, in fact, insist that, well, the data shows that illegal aliens are better than Americans. They commit fewer crimes. Yeah, here's what. If the prosecutors I always try and say, crime is down. Crime is down. I don't know what these Republicans are so upset about. Crime is down. Yeah. You know what happens when you stop prosecuting shoplifting? Store owners stop contacting the police to report shoplifting. If shoplifting is not reported, then in the crime statistics, it didn't happen. So if last year you had 10 instances of shoplifting, and this year everybody realized that you're not going to prosecute shoplifting, it's not worth the time, they're not going to bother calling in. You have no instance of shoplifting reported to the police. You might have had 50 instances of shoplifting, but if none are reported to the police, it's like ServPro came through and just sucked it all up. It's like it never even happened. Then suddenly, why, our shoplifting data shows that shoplifting is down. It doesn't even occur anymore. Also, when you put everything behind plexiglass in a store, it makes it a little more difficult to steal stuff. So again, are you really seeing a drop in crime because there was a surge in character of the people? No, that's not how it works. It's people going, there's no point in calling police. I had a car that somebody tried to steal once. It was an 85, some sort of Oldsmobile thing. It was a junky used car, but apparently if it had a tilt steering wheel, it would have been really, my friend's brother was a mechanic. He said if it had a tilt steering wheel, they would have gotten away with it, would have stolen it for a joyride or whatever. But they would have gotten it easily, but it didn't. So it was impossible to just steal very easily. But I came out, I was going to school one morning, going to college, and the little back window was smashed. The little tiny small window was smashed. Never did get it fixed, just put some cardboard and tape over it because it was too expensive. But they smashed it. They tried to steal it because it was there. It was easy. It was worth a shot. It was no big deal. There were no consequences for it. I didn't bother calling the police because the car wasn't actually stolen. I didn't have insurance. I had insurance, but I had no-fault insurance, which meant if somebody smashed the car into a block, I'd get $400 no matter what. I had insurance to cover myself, but not that kind of insurance. It was an old beater car that I paid $400 for, so $400 was fine. But that didn't happen. Nobody tried to steal my car. There was no property damage. There was nothing, according to the crime statistics in Baltimore or in Dearborn, Michigan. Why? Because I didn't report it. It happened, but it didn't happen. The same sort of thing. If you know that pretty much anything short of assault, rape, or murder is not going to be prosecuted, and even then, maybe, you're not going to bother. Hey, there's a couple of bums fighting out here. They're not going to show up for that. Why bother calling the police? Somebody stole all of our shaving cream or hair dye or makeup or whatever. Why are you going to do that? They're not going to drop everything. APB. Everybody, not a police officer will arrest it. No, the higher-ups, because of the politicians, go, we're not going to bother with this. The politicians aren't going to allow prosecution of this. The prosecutors say, we're not, it's a victimless crime. Let it go. So you don't report crime. And then suddenly, crime drops. But weirdly, violent crime is up. They don't ever acknowledge that. Violent crime is up. But nobody's stealing anything? Anybody believe that? Does that make sense? No, of course not. It doesn't make any sense. It's exactly what I said. I don't have the statistics to back that up because you can't have the statistics to back that up if people aren't reporting the crime. But I promise you, I guarantee you, that's actually what's happening here. But the little gaggle sixth circle of hell version of The View over at MSNBC just goes, why do they care about illegal immigration? I don't wish bad things to happen to the people, to anybody. But since they do happen, if it happened to one of those people's relatives or somebody they cared about, I guarantee you they'd sing a different tune. So you just have to watch what these people say. And it's kind of funny. You sit there and, what do they care about illegal immigration? What do they care about the border for? Okay. Well, you're not poor. What do you care about the poor for? Well, that's different. It's compassion. Okay. No, but your compassion hurts people. Your so-called compassion hurts people. And in every respect, they don't care. They don't care. They have an agenda, and people are delivery devices, individuals, issues, whatever it is. They are all the peanut butter that you wrap the pill in to get the dog to take it. They don't. The point is, they want the pill. in the dog. They don't care how they get in there. Just give it right to the dog. They'll put it in one of those pill pouches. They'll wrap it in peanut butter. They'll do anything they have to do. They don't care. If you've ever had to give an animal medicine, you know how big of a pain in the butt that can be. Now imagine that you're trying to get power. You're obsessed with getting power. You demand that you get power. You're going to look at people and go, oh, this is, we need to care about this thing. George Floyd, junkie, we need to care about him. He's amazing. He's a great family man and father. When was the last time he saw his daughter? He lived 1,000 miles away from his daughter. If anybody had let his daughter live with them, they would have been accused of child abuse because he's a freaking junkie, right? He's a damn junkie. You would not send your kid, a kid, anybody else a kid, even if it's their kid, to go, all right, well, I understand that your father has a serious drug problem, but he is your father. Nobody would say that. Biology trumps everything else, except for when it comes to gender. But they build him as, oh, he's such an amazing human being. Sainthood. God is waiting for him. Yeah, they kind of go, what the hell? We gave you life and this is what you did with it? To say they're out of touch is to say everything, including and especially the obvious. And speaking of out of touch when it comes to immigration, New York City, why, that was the shining beacon of sanctuarydom, was it not? It was wonderful. New York, come to New York. We celebrate diversity. Now, it's really easy to say that when you're 2,000 miles away from the border. And the illegal aliens are coming there. They're trickling in. But suddenly, somebody takes you up on your offer who isn't an illegal alien and says, hey, you know what? We're going to start helping you. You want to be a sanctuary city? We'll give you people to sanctuary city on. And they start bussing up illegals. And suddenly, a city of 8 million people are completely overwhelmed by 30,000. 30,000. I tell you, this is a testament. You got to be careful. You can't look at the squad or the progressive caucus and say, well, they're just a small amount of people, a small number of people committed enough can do enormous damage. The Nazis were a distinct minority in Germany. Look what they did. Communists, distinct minority in China and in Russia. It wasn't as though they may have outnumbered their opposition, but the vast majority of people were just indifferent. Just indifferent. They didn't, what are you going to do? China is not going to change dramatically, and it hasn't really changed dramatically. They're more nationalistic. Russia, like Stalin, he's got some good ideas. What are you going to do? We're just going to let it kind of happen. The Tsar is a little bit old. We'll go with this Lenin fellow. We'll sit idly by and let it happen. Doesn't matter who's in charge. You know, Republicans, Democrats, the Uniparty. You hear that all the time. The Uniparty. Everybody always means it differently. It's dumb to say that. There are differences. There are similarities amongst the parties for sure, and there's a lot of crossover. There are a lot of liberal Republicans, no conservative Democrats, but there are a lot of liberal Republicans. But to say that the two parties mean they're the same thing is lazy. It's easy. It fires up an audience, gets people, yeah, you tell them. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't even really reflect reality, but, you know, the people who say it are more interested in ratings than they are for a cause. And so they just in perpetuating their own paychecks. And it works. It works. You can do that. You can dine out for a long time on ignorance and never miss a meal. But reality does have a funny way of creeping in. You just, you know, people don't pay attention to it. Just like, you know, reality has a way of creeping into everything. Well, there's, it's a total woman. Oh, I can tell. I saw how big of a woman she was when we were standing together at the urinal the other day. Huh? Yeah, no. The governor of Texas started looking at around the country and said, sanctuary cities, it's really easy to be a sanctuary city. It's really easy to insist that you have cornered the market on compassion when it costs you absolutely nothing. Right? It costs you absolutely nothing to virtue signal. So Greg Abbott said, we're going to take it to the next level. You're so compassionate. Here you go. We're going to continue the game of Red Rover with a second checkpoint, and that will be Times Square. Well, now New York is singing a different tune. They're sitting around going, we need money for all of these cities. We need more money from the federal government. We need more money from the federal government. There's no more money from the federal. You need the government to print more money is what you need, which will then dilute the money that already exists, which will then create more inflation, etc., etc. Lather, rinse, repent. Well, now New York has come up with a new plan, because a normal person would look at this and go, well, here's the solution. I can't help but notice you're digging yourself. You're in a hole. You dug a hole, and now the hole is so deep you're stuck in the hole. First of all, step one in any solution is put the shovel down. Stop digging, right? Then we can work on getting you out of there. But first thing you have to do is stop digging. And New York, for New York to stop digging, for all of these cities to stop digging, would be for them to renounce their sanctuary status, for them to acknowledge that, hey, wait a second, this is an untenable, unsustainable situation we have here. See, it's really easy to be super compassionate when it's just ruining Texas border towns, when it's bothering San Diego, when it's screwing up parts of Arizona. Because all you got to do is go, well, I'm not going to go to Eagle Pass for spring break this year. I'm going to go someplace else. But when it's brought home, when people call your bluff, it's a different story. It's uncomfortable. You don't want to acknowledge these sorts of things. It's problematic, as they say. So you pretend that it isn't happening. And then when it starts happening, you ignore it for as long as you can. You try and tread water as long as you can and say, this is great, this is great. No. Diversity is our strength. Diversity is our strength. And now New York is kind of giving up, but they can't do what would actually stop it and say, we're no longer going to be a sanctuary city. They're doing it a little bit when it comes to beating up police. They go, all right, well, we'll turn those people over to ICE or we'll honor detainers. But see, nobody's a murderer until they murder, right? But nobody really starts off, or very few people start off with murder. Law-abiding, it's my same argument with Hunter Biden. Hey, we're supposed to believe that his life was all together and well and good and perfectly fine until he was about 40 years old. And then he goes, you know what I never did? Lot of crack and sleeping with a lot of hookers and film mice. I'm going to give that a shot. I've lived life on the straight and narrow till now, and I've always wanted to try crack. So I'm going to go on a bender. No, you've been a degenerate your whole life. You just maybe didn't elevate your game to that point. But actually, before, they always say he did it because of the grief of Bo Biden dying, except that he was run out of the military 2 years before Bo Biden died for testing positive multiple times for cocaine. And other than that, other than the fact that their whole argument has a complete exposure as fraud, they're totally genuinely sincere. Anyway, illegal aliens don't just go, you know what, I'm going to go kill that guy. What the hell? They steal. They're involved in violence. They're involved in gang activity. They're involved in drug trafficking. And then eventually that could lead to killing. You see these people who have been arrested, these illegal aliens who have been arrested for violent sex crimes or assaults or whatever, when we find out about them, when eventually the truth comes out, it's like, well, they were encountered with police multiple occasions, sanctuary, no contacting of ICE, blah, blah, blah. And you go, oh, that makes sense. Lake and Riley's alleged murderer had a bunch of run-ins with police. Various crimes, stealing, endangering a child, whatever it is, all illegal. And then eventually it led to what was alleged to have happened there. I'm like, huh, who does that surprise? Nobody. And if these are just the things they got caught doing, what did they not get caught doing? So now New York City is going, we can't admit that we're not going to be a sanctuary city. We can't be a sanctuary city, but we can't admit we can't be a sanctuary city. So they're trying to implement. Nobody's taking it because nobody goes, you know what I really want to do? I want to illegally enter the United States and live in Albany, New York. Nobody says that. I want to live in upstate New York. What I really need is a life filled with lake effect snow and limited prospects for jobs. No, New York City, it's the place. They love it when they make it in the movies. Oh, it's the place where everybody goes, where your dreams come true. Well, illegal aliens are believing that, and they want to go to New York City. Plus, there's a high concentration of illegals and even legals in this country who don't speak English, where they don't have to worry about the language barrier. There's also a demand. The wealthy population of New York City doesn't want to have to take care of their own kids. They don't want to have to clean their own apartments. They don't want to have to do a lot of things. So they also don't want to have to pay fair market prices for labor. So they can hire some illegals. But, of course, I had no idea that the person I needed an interpreter to speak to was here illegally. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. Ignorance is bliss. Yet they're always miserable. So listen to this New York report about the plan to pay rent for a year and ship off to other parts of the state the illegal aliens, as many illegal aliens as they can get their hands on, but the illegal aliens don't want to go, and there aren't very many other parts of the state as crazy, as suicidal as New York City, who is willing to take them. It's kind of a conundrum, and I love seeing it. When all they have to do is go, you know what, we're no longer a sanctuary city. We will cooperate with ICE. Now, it costs them nothing except for prestige, honestly, amongst liberals, because this ICE under this administration ain't going to do a damn thing about it anyway. But they can't even do that. It's a toothless, it would be a toothless cave, but they won't do it.
So last summer, New York State offered to help, launching a $25 million migrant relocation program, paying an entire year's rent for every migrant family that chooses to move out of the city. The problem is New York's suburban communities don't want them. Just five of the state's 62 counties are accepting migrant relocations, including Suffolk County. But today, a county spokesperson tells Fox it's now reevaluating. Quote, Suffolk County is not, nor will it be, a sanctuary city, and we have not agreed to accepting undocumented migrants. We are working with the state on clarification of the program. Rockland County's Republican executive Ed Day says this is the city's problem.
Because you asked for it. You're a sanctuary city. We're not. The fact of the matter is we don't have the ability to do it.
We're not interested. You did this. Why? We're not going to take your problem. They're not trying to find places to take them as much as they're trying to find places to put them. They're ultimately going to end up doing what they're constantly complaining about Texas having done. Look at whatever county, let's just say it's Johnston County. Johnston County, New York, it doesn't exist. I'm just making it up. But Johnston County, New York is not a sanctuary county. They don't want these illegals. Well, New York City doesn't give a damn. They're going to ship them there. They're now Johnston. You get them into Johnston County. You give them a debit card with 10 grand on it to pay for rent or whatever they want to pay for with it. And you just go, well, they're in Johnston County now. Possession is 9/10 the law. Location is 9/10 the law. They're doing what they're whining and complaining, or they will do, ultimately, what they're whining and complaining about Texas doing to them. They're shipping them here. At least they wanted to go there. Now, all they have to do to stop this is say, we will now cooperate with ICE. We're not going to accept it, not just on criminal aliens, but on people here illegally. It will literally cost them nothing, except outrage from the left, which is what they're most terrified of, but it would cost them nothing because ICE isn't. You find some illegal alien who is guilty of jaywalking or shoplifting or whatever, some nonviolent crime. I mean, the president of the United States says he opposes the deportation of anybody who's caught drunk driving. Now you get not the book thrown at you, you get a library thrown at you if you're an American caught drunk driving. But if you're an illegal alien drunk driving, they'll go, well, we wouldn't want to put you in prison because then ICE may find out about it. Well, yeah, you swear you won't do it again? Oh, yeah, no, totally. Never, ever. All right, go ahead. The two-tiered system of justice. Two-tiered system of justice. Well, New York eventually is going to be forced, and that's the beauty of what Greg Abbott has been doing down in Texas, and to a lesser degree, and helping out, certainly, Ron DeSantis has been doing down in Florida, is you helped create this problem. You cheered the creation of this problem. You morally preened and peacocked about the existence of this problem and how it is so wonderful, and you're so morally superior to everybody else that we said, you should enjoy this problem. You should take a big dose of your own medicine. And when they get it, they at first tried to stop it. Then they noticed people were looking, and they said, well, no, we're going to do this. They've commandeered hotels in Manhattan. And if you've ever been to Manhattan, hotels in Manhattan aren't cheap. They're paying $400 a night for hotels. And it turns out that just like public housing here, if you've ever been in public housing, I've been in a lot of public housing back in Detroit when I was doing roofing. If you give somebody something, they don't really have the appreciation for it. You would think they should, right? You give somebody a place to live. They don't own it, but it's, here you go. It's subsidized housing. It's a horrible cookie cutter kind of place, and you're surrounded by a whole bunch of, and the things start falling off. The handrails start getting loose. Somebody knocks a hole in the drywall. Somebody breaks a window, and you go, well, that's the government's job to fix. It's not my place. I don't care. I don't care. There's no pride of ownership. There's no pride whatsoever. That same sort of thing is happening in these hotels. If you think it's expensive to put these illegal aliens up in these hotels at $400 a night at some of these hotels, which is what they're paying for the whole hotel at $400 a night for each room, wait until they eventually get them out of there and they have to go back to being a hotel, getting the smell out, getting the damage out, getting the stains out, getting all of that out. The city's going to have to foot the bill for that, too. It couldn't happen to a nicer group of people. Honestly, really couldn't. Let's switch gears, talking from illegal immigration to just bad policy. President of the United States, they're desperate. They're desperately trying to find anything to hook young voters, to get them interested in Joe Biden. It would be as though you're putting on a Matlock convention, right? But you're concerned that your audience is skewing a little young. You want to hip it up. There's no way to hip up Matlock. This just, you either like Matlock or you don't. I haven't watched it in forever, but I used to enjoy Matlock, not when it was on first run, but it was really great on in the background, not having to pay attention to show at 2 o'clock in the morning when I was cramming for a test. That's how I like my Matlock. Like I like my drinking, in the middle of the night and alone, while crying, smoking cigarettes. No, but you watch Matlock, it's perfectly fine show. But it is not going to appeal to the TikTok generation. Not uniformly, anyway. You get 5-10% of the people who, you know, are interested. They'll also take up knitting and needlepoint and things like that. There's always going to be somebody doing it. It's just not going to be the hit that it was the first time around. Well, same with crocheting, same with knitting. When it first came around, like, boom, everybody's doing it. It was great. It was the new thing. Now it's something grandmas do. Well, Joe is something that grandmas do. Actually, grandmas probably don't do it. But there's no appeal there. You look at Joe and you don't go, that's hip. That's what I want. What I really want, you strap a guitar on that guy. Well, I love Taylor Swift and I love the guy who shuffles and speaks incoherently. Boy, I can't get enough Travis Kelce and whatever that guy's doing over there, talking to himself, mumbling, whispering into the microphone. Then he's yelling into the microphone. Now he's whispering into the microphone. There's just nothing about Joe Biden that would appeal to people. Now his politics could, except that young people grew up online. And the thing about growing up online is you watch videos online constantly. You will have come across, no matter how insulated, no matter how many of the social media, TikTok influencer videos you want, you will eventually come across somewhere on social media people with old clips of Joe Biden. Mocking Joe Biden. No matter how insulated your life is, if your life is online, you can't help but come across somebody going this, that, and the other thing. Here you go. Here's a video of Joe Biden. And you go, wow, first of all, that guy could talk like a normal human being. Seems kind of dumb when he was younger, but he could talk. And that just reminds you of how much Joe Biden has aged and how much he has slowed. Then you've got Joe Biden on every side of every issue throughout the course of his career, with no real explanation as to why he has changed his position on literally everything. I passed a crime bill. Sorry about that crime bill. That sort of stuff. Ah, Delaware was a slave state. Boy, how do you can't go into a 7-Eleven without a slight Indian accent? And Barack Obama is a dream, man. He's the first black guy who's clean, articulate. Huh. That sounds an awful lot like everything that you've been conditioned to renounce and denounce as racist. And so you go, the more exposure to Joe Biden, the less the hair-triggered perma-victim class of progressive youth are going to be interested in supporting this guy, because he really is, at one point in his life, has been everything they are conditioned and taught to hate, to despise. And they're also conditioned to hate and despise and embrace the concept that there is no redemption, right? Unless it's total and complete. If you do a complete and total reversal on everything, if you are a down-the-line leftist now, then you are. Your 99% friend is your 100% enemy, they're taught. And what is that 1% that Joe Biden is not kowtowing and capitulating? It's Israel. It's Israel. Now he's calling, they need a ceasefire, we need, but he also wants the release of hostages. And he's calling for a temporary ceasefire. It's never enough. You can never appease these people unless you completely surrender. And Joe Biden can't do that because he runs risk of alienating far too many people. The American public is on the side, by and large, except for the Democrats, on the side of Israel. They were attacked. They're responding. So they're caught in this no-win situation where they're desperately trying to find ways to appeal to young people, but they can't do what is necessary for them to get to the point where a large percentage of those young people will stop screaming at other Democrats, stop screaming at the president. They haven't had campaign events for Joe Biden, partially because they're not really sure he could do them for very long. But when they do events, they are closed to the general public and usually filled with like union members who have been heavily vetted in smaller rooms. And even then, protesters, anti-Israeli protesters, have managed to get in the room. So if they did larger rallies, there'd be no stopping them from getting in. And it would be an endless stream, like you saw with Adam Schiff's victory speech on Super Tuesday. It'd be every 3 minutes, somebody standing up and screaming, because these people, they used to do it all at once in unison, and 20 people would be removed from the room all at once, and then you could get on with it. And then it started with Code Pink. Code Pink realized that if you got 20 people there, you can disrupt the hearing 20 different times. You could either disrupt it one time with 20 people and cause a big stink, or you can disrupt it 20 different times and make sure that nothing gets done. And you just sit there and you go, wow, you guys are really just asses. I'm like, yeah, they are. They're not accomplishing anything except publicity and fundraising, and that's it. That's good enough. These people are about destruction. They're not about getting anything done. Well, these people, the left has adopted that same philosophy, and now they're disrupting events. They can't have Joe Biden out there being interrupted over Israel. They want to pretend that they're like, well, we don't really. No, they want to have their cake and eat it too there. They want to be pro-Israel-ish, but not so pro-Israel that you can't be a terrorist sympathizer and still vote for him, right? So they're trying to scramble to find other things. They're trying to do the student loan, quote unquote, forgiveness. What we need to do is we do it. The Supreme Court told me no, but I told the Supreme Court, yeah. Yeah, that's the attitude of a rapist. Yeah, she told me no, but she really meant yeah. By the way, to celebrate Women's History Month, Jill Biden went out and gave a speech about how Donald Trump is so mean to women. He's horrible, bad for women. And like, yeah, your husband was accused of a staffer of rape. You've never once been asked about it because you're a Democrat. You're insulated from such things. But it is true. Tara Reid does exist. And your husband is refusing to allow access to his archives from the Senate to see whether or not there are any documents in there claiming with her claiming filing a complaint. So spare me this Donald Trump hates women thing because your husband has got his own problems, right? Right? Anyway, they've tried the student loan forgiveness. They're trying everything they can. They're slowly moving towards it. They want to convince the left, look, we don't like Israel all that much. Our relationship with Israel is totally utilitarian. It's what you'd, if you're going to cheat on your significant other and a person's kind of bothered by it, don't you have a boyfriend? Well, don't you have a girlfriend? I do, but I mean, we're not really together. It's kind of, you know, on the end. Nobody's ever really said it yet, but we all know that it's over for the most part. Don't worry, babe. I'll definitely going to think about totally leaving her soon. Now let's get back to business. Yeah, don't believe anybody in that situation, okay? Just don't. So now they've come up with another thing to appeal to younger people. So right now, Biden's economy is so bad. And the Democrats, of course, the Democrats on TV, when your world is sort of focused and framed through the people on cable news, the people on cable news are doing quite well. They're making a lot of money. They're doing pretty damn good. So you talk about how tough it is to pay your bills or how much it costs when you go to the grocery store. If you're making $50,000 a year, yeah, it's tough. If you're making, like Rachel Maddow, $30 million a year to work one day a week, you are the very definition of out of touch. You may go down to the Whole Foods, or there's probably even a richer person grocery store up in Manhattan. You go down there and you look at the price of, you don't look at things. You never have put anything back in the last 20 years. You've never put anything back because you filled up your shopping cart and then you look at it as before you go to the checkout. Everybody knows that feeling. You go to the checkout as you're thinking about getting ready to go and you go, do we really need this? Do we really need that? And you end up putting a bunch of items back. I do that. I've been doing that my whole life. And even if I can afford it, even when I can't afford it, I still go, do I really need this? Do I really need that? That mentality sticks with you. It haunts you. I imagine it won't stick with you if you're making $30 million a year. But you also then lose any thought of, my God, eggs are expensive. When you're making $30 million a year for doing nothing, plus the millions of dollars for speeches and books and whatever else she gets. I imagine you go through the grocery store without even looking at prices. You go, ooh, I'll take some of that. Ooh, yeah, I'll take some of that. Ooh, I'll take some of that. And that's it. That's how you shop. So you're not going to be able to relate to somebody who has to put stuff back, who has to shop with coupons. My mother, I was talking to somebody, my friend Shark, yesterday, talking about, called him to see how he's doing. And it's like, my mom was the queen of coupons. He understood that. The house I grew up in is now for sale, right? It's amazing. It's $149,000 they're asking for it. The guy bought it, 15 years ago for $17,000 in a foreclosure. My parents sold it in 1996 for $60,000. They bought it in 1962 for $10,000. And it's for sale. And so I finally got to see some pictures of the inside of it and everything. It was very nostalgic and everything. I was remembering all this stuff. And you go to the grocery store with my mom. She was the queen of coupons. Not only was she the queen of coupons, I always thought she was just, you know, frugal, cheap. Then I found out, finally, what my dad was making. They're like, no, we had to. It's seven mouths to feed on not a lot of money. And so coupon clipping wasn't just something to pass the time. It was a necessity. And then when it was double coupons, boy, howdy, it was gangbusters. And then there was a sale on top. My mother could find the intersection between a sale, bulk discount, coupon and double coupon, like all of that. They live right there, and she would have multiple types of coupons. She would get coupons from neighbors. She would take, because you get coupons in a couple of different papers. We had coupons like you wouldn't believe. And when it came down, she would get stuff for free. She would get stuff for next to free. We'd all have to conga line through the checkout line because they had a limit on how many cans of tuna fish you could buy at a time. But we would then go and do it. And then if it was good enough, we'd go put it in the car. And we're going back through. Boom, boom, boom. That was how life was. It didn't seem weird. It wasn't weird at all. It's amazing how my wife was looking at the pictures of the house. And she's like, it seems so small. Like, it was small. It was 20 feet by 20 feet. It's only 920 square feet or whatever because half the basement is finished. But it was 20 by 20, and it was an unfinished basement, one bathroom, seven people. Never, I asked my sister last night, do you remember waiting for the bathroom? And I was like, no, you did your business. Someone was in the shower, the curtain was closed. You go in, you did your business, you got out. You threw a cup of cold water over the top of the shower, let them know you were there, because that's what we did. If they were particularly annoying at that point, you flush the toilet, and then they would scream and yell again, and you get hot there. The shower gets super hot. It was, but it was, damn, it was fun. It was good. But you don't lose that mentality. And so Joe is trying to find a way, and the progressive left is trying to find a way to sort of appeal to those people. But it's tourism for that. It's poverty tourism. They can't relate to these people because they never were these people, or they've been not just, you know, they've gotten a job and they've been professional and been doing all right. They are making so much money now that they can't relate to them. Like, the concept is foreign. They've forgotten, if they ever were, they've forgotten what it's like to be in that situation. So they're trying to pander. Let's forgive student loans. Well, that's not going to help anybody. The people I grew up with that didn't go to college don't give a damn that you're forgiving student loans. They didn't go to school. They don't have student loans. They got a trade. They worked their ass, or they paid off their own student loans. So you're like, why the hell do I have to pay off somebody else? Take out a loan, you pay it back. Now they're trying to do the credit card late fees. Joe Biden announced yesterday that he's changing the rules and knocking down credit card late fees to $8. Now, if you miss a payment, you're late, whatever, it's going to be $8 instead of somewhere in the neighborhood of $30, he says. The real problem for Joe Biden isn't that some people are getting hit with credit card late fees. It's that Joe Biden's economic plan has caused so many people to have to run up their credit cards. Right? That has caused so many people to look at it and go, I just can't pay this credit card right now. I'm going to have to take a hit on the late fee because I have to wait until next payday to be able to pay the minimum balance on this thing. I've been there. I've had my first credit card was $500 limit. I ran that sucker up because I was an idiot because nobody told me anything. I filled out the thing at a Tigers game and got a free helmet. Like, I did it for the free helmet, never thinking I'd get the credit card. Then I got the credit card. Like, ooh, $500. Nobody ever talked to me about credit, so I thought, well, I better not use it. Better not use it. And then once you start using it, like, wait, I can buy this, and then there's, like, I still have the same money in my pocket that I had before. This is great. Give me more. Give me more. And I ran it up. And then I couldn't afford to pay it. Couldn't afford to pay the minimum at a time. And so you incur a late fee on top of the overcharge fee, of course, all this other thing, and it just keeps snowballing. Becomes an absolute nightmare. I was a young, stupid person, so I did that to myself. But Joe Biden's economy has created a whole bunch of people who have no choice but to use their credit cards to pay their bills. And it's going to limit the fee to $8. That's great. I'm only going to punch you in the face twice instead of five times. Now, come congratulate me, vote for me. Let's listen to Joe make this announcement, seemingly unaware that his policies are making every other aspect of this transaction much worse.
With the announcement of this new rule, late fees are now going down to $8, $8, instead of the current average of $32 late fee payments. This action will collectively save families $10 billion in credit card late fees every year.
$10 billion are going to be saved. That means there's a hell of a lot of people who are paying their credit cards late. Does it not? Why are they paying their credit cards late? Because everything else is so expensive. If you have to choose between feeding your family or paying your credit card, you're obviously going to feed your family. Making the fine $34 or $8, it's going to save you some money, but you're still drowning. Does it really matter? People are still throwing dirt on you. You're still sinking into the mud, but don't worry, you're sinking a little bit slower. Okay, congratulations. How about you stop throwing the mud on us in the first place, Joe? Your inflationary policies, your horrible economic decisions are diluting the value of our currency by printing up more and more and more money. Your welcoming in of every illegal alien on the face of the earth is depressing wages even further. And so higher inflation, lower wages leads to what? Leads to more people reliant on credit cards to make ends meet, which leads to what? People missing payments because the government created a scenario where they're completely and totally screwed, where it's almost impossible to make your ends meet. And oh, by the way, then you add in, except for if you're building high density housing, yeah, the environmental restrictions on everything, so you can't build new actual houses. It's only condos and townhouses and apartment buildings. You can build those because then they can house a bunch of illegal aliens. You can't build single-family houses without 15 million impact studies on the environment. So you end up in a situation where the average person will never be able to afford a home, which is how you can kind of get ahead of the poverty trap. And it's all because of his horrible policies and the people, the policies that he embraces and the people he listens to. But don't worry. He's going to save you $28 a month if you're always paying your credit cards late. What are you going to do with that windfall? What windfall? You're not actually, it's money you're not having to pay, but it's money you weren't paying anyway, which is the problem. He solved the problem he created and made worse. Vote him again? Hell no. Tell you though, what's horrible is Joe Biden is just an aside back to the house I grew up in. They didn't update anything. That's not true. They updated the stove, the dishwasher. I think the dishwasher. The dishwasher might have been the same because we maybe got a new dishwasher. We haven't lived in the family hasn't owned the house since 1996. But the refrigerator. But the cabinets are not like nobody would accept. They're just basically wood doors on screw hinges. And, like it's nothing cabinety about them. They were held together with magnets. I think my dad made them, maybe. Weird. It's straight. The house was built in 1951. It's straight out of 1951. And the kitchen counter is still this yellow Formica thing. It's like, my God, you got this thing for a song. You rented it out for years. You've already made more than your money back 1,000 times over, and then you quote unquote renovated it because when we were there for my brother-in-law's funeral, we walked around the house. Nobody was there, but they were doing work and like, oh, they're going to upgrade things. They're going to do this ladder, tarps. I mean, they just painted stuff horribly. My sister went in the house yesterday, dripped down paint. They haphazardly, lazily stained the floor. The carpet in the basement is still the carpet we had. The Afghan holder my dad made is still stuck to the wall down there. I told my sister to take it off, but she said, screw it in, I can't take it off. They just didn't do anything to it. I'm like, you could have at least, I don't know. The sink in the basement and the toilets are the same. Like, you can update some of this stuff if you're going to ask for this kind of money. But no. And it's just, it's weird watching it all. There's just this week, it's the anniversary, the 1 year anniversary of my dad dying. And so you super nostalgic. And then to be able to get into the house, he wanted to see inside the house, said he would have liked to have seen inside the house. If he wanted to, he probably would have tried, but said he wanted to see and it wouldn't have minded seeing inside the house and wasn't able to. And yeah, I don't know if he'd have been able to make it up the stairs at all, but it's still the same house. Nothing has changed. The old china cabinets there, the everything was there. But it is small. Thinking about maybe posting on social media the link to the Zillow thing, it'd be weird. But anyway, let's get to our president one last time before we say goodbye for today. And Cookie, he's got the real problem. The real problem isn't inflation. It's shrinkflation, you see. We have a problem in this country with obesity. And we have a problem in this country with obtusity. We've got obtuse in the White House. We have insane in the White House. And we've got the cause of inflation in the White House. And he can't be the cause. He can't allow people to realize he's the cause of inflation. So he's now saying that things that are costing the same or costing more, you're getting less of it. I'm not really sure that somebody needs 16 ounces of Doritos or, you know, 14 ounces of Doritos. I'm not sure that you need more than like 1 or 2 ounces of Doritos. But that's beside the point. You're getting, for the same price, smaller bags. You know that if you just pay attention to things. And if it really bothers you, you probably eat too many Doritos. But Joe is now trying to say things are more expensive and you're getting less for them. Forgetting, not bothering to pay attention to the things are more expensive part, which he caused. He's trying to say that thing you're getting less of it, which is corporate greed. But it's actually something he caused. If it costs you $5 to make something and you sell it for $10, you're making a $5 profit, and you need to pay your employees and everything and packaging and shipping. So it maybe ended up making 50 cents per whatever it is, per widget in this situation. Well, government causes inflation, which causes everything else to cost more money. You want to keep your price at $10, if you will, but now the cost to make it is $6. Well, you're going to raise the price to $12 to cover the cost or $11? People, maybe your price point is $10 and that's the max anybody's going to pay. You're going to end up losing customers if you do that. So what do? You're selling 1 pound of it $10. You could sell 14 ounces of it for $10. Then your price is still $10. You're not costing your customers more. You are per ounce. But overall, for just buying your product, you're not costing it. And 2 ounces isn't that much of a difference. Now the president's going, this is an outrage. These companies are doing this out of greed. No, the companies are doing it out of necessity. Your inflation is causing things to cost more. They can either price themselves out of business or reduce the size of their product and keep a good chunk of their customers. That's what he's talking about in this clip, although he's not saying it so artfully. And he drags in Cookie Monster because he's a child.
In fact, some of the small snack companies, you won't and think you won't even notice what they're doing. When they charge you just as much for the same size bag of potato chips, only has a hell of a lot fewer chips in it. I'll tell you who did notice, the Cookie Monster. He pointed out his cookies are getting smaller, paying the same price. I was stunned when I found out that's what actually happened.
Yeah, Cookie Monster. Apparently, Cookie Monster's official Twitter account went on tweeting about this too, helping out Joe Biden, sort of endorsing Joe Biden, which is a no-no for a nonprofit like the company that runs Sesame Street, the Children's Television Workshop or whatever. And then suddenly the account went dark and wouldn't respond anymore. That's beside the point. Joe Biden is the cause of that. Inflation, Joe Biden's inflation, Bidenflation is the cause of that. Companies have a choice. They could charge you more or they can give you a little bit less. In the grand scheme of things, in Doritos, does it really matter? Or cookies, if you get one less cookie, are you counting your Fritos? Are you counting your cookies? If you are, you got bigger problems than you're willing to address. But ultimately, the biggest problem, the real problem, the root of it, is Joe Biden and his progressive policies. He's now enlisting a child's puppet to distract you from that. And I believe and I fear that he will lock down the three-year-old vote. Other people hopefully won't fall for that crap, but you never know. A lot of people went to public school, myself included, so there's hope. Anyway, that is enough for today. If you want to see the house I grew up in, go, you can email me and I'll send you the link. I'm not going to blast, I don't know if I'll blast it out, but it's I don't know how you would respond in seeing this same thing. Yeah, I got a little misty-eyed looking at it. Like, man, it's a lot of good memories. You sit there and you hope, can you do the same? Will my kids, when I'm gone, look back at this house or wherever we end up living, or the last house, yeah, will they look at those things the same way? Probably not, because they haven't lived any place for very long, whereas my family had been in the house for years before I came along, and then they were in it for years until, well, I'd moved out by the time they had sold it. So it was our only house for all of us, really, except for my brother, who lived in a trailer with my parents when they first got married. So it's a lot of good memories there. I guess the memories don't need a location, so I can look forward to that with my kids. But a lot of my memories are in that location. Anyway, that's enough. I'm going to start crying again. That's it. Support the program, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com or just PayPal at DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com. Thanks for all the support. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the indulgence. My trips down memory.